Dhruv. Dhruv. Do you feed the second horse? This horse? Yeah? What is that horse name? Okay. The horse with no name. So hearing about the operation of the Buddha Gopikas in chapter 35 called the Dugala Gita. And there are different pairs of verses. Dugala means pairs. Different pairs of verses glorifying Krishna in the separation. And in that separation from Krishna, the gopis were in the association of Krishna. So the first pair, text 2 to 3, when Mukunda vibrates his flute, and this is because they're remembering things that happened, all the pastimes that they're speaking about have already happened in the Bhagavatam, that mentions in different parts. So this one is from the 21st chapter of the Vinaya Gita. This Manavikshan. Money to Utsava Rupasila. When Mukunda vibrates his flute, the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping his holes with his two fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the Siddhas, become amazed. Why are they amazed? At the amazing sound vibration. Because Krishna was just a young boy and he was incredibly expert at his flute. There's one verse also in the 21st chapter that describes how the flute is so powerful and how deeply it affects the hearts of all living creatures, and even non-living creatures, that it changes the properties of the rocks, and they become soft and melt, and the water becomes hard, like ice. It stops flowing. So this is the power of Krishna's flute. It changes the inherent nature. So as those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find that their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires. And in their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. So this is a symptom of their ecstasy. It is not material, but in ecstasy, their bodies become soft. This is one of the symptoms of ecstasy. Their bodies become smaller, lessened in size. We heard yesterday how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's bodies sometimes become expanded in size and sometimes they contract in size. So these demigoddesses' bodies would contract, and that would cause that ecstasy would cause their garments to loosen. So there's a lengthy comment that Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, and probably all the verses, different degrees, so this is a long one though. Remember, they're feeling separation from them. They, due to social custom, because they're mostly married to others, they can't go to Krishna. They can't even look at Krishna. The wives of Krishna can look at him directly in public, and no one will complain and no one will criticize them. So they, but these, the and the deities, this was their husbands. Anyway, we'll see what they say. But the gopis feel they can't even look at Krishna. So here's, this is the tension that causes rasa. There's something called santarasa. In santarasa, everyone is completely peaceful. And because santarasa, there's no churning of moods and emotions in rasa, it's not actually considered a rasa by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because there has to be churning. So one of the elements of the churning for the gopis is that they want to be with Krishna more than they want, more than their own lives. And yet they can't be with him. They can't even look at him. So they're thinking, whatever they see, and think about, whatever they see or think about is going to produce great emotions in about Krishna, because there's this churning, the tension between these, the two different things. They have an incredible tension in their consciousness. And when there's tension in the consciousness, it can have different effects. If the tension in the consciousness has to do with love for Krishna, it will cause ecstasy. And if it has to do with selfish, typical selfish motivations, it has the exact opposite effect. It's a different kind of material anxiety. So here's the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, we'll read some of it. When herding his cows in the Vrindavan forest, Krishna played his flute to announce his arrival and to console the trees, creepers, birds, beasts suffering in separation from him. So within that statement, it indicates that when Krishna would go to the forest, all the trees, all the beasts, what kind of beasts were there? But no bears. Were there bears in Vrindavan? Dancing bears, perhaps. Beasts, even deer, simple beasts like that. And maybe right now, even sometimes you see haris there. Haris. Huh? Yeah, hair. Haris. And they're also in Whiteman Park. So everyone would feel ecstasy when Krishna would enter the forest and the trees would blossom, because everyone's existence totally rested on Krishna. Now, this is not possible for us to comprehend, actually, because it can't be comprehended theoretically. But it's the nature of the love of the resonance of Vrindavan for Krishna that there, it's not just, I like you, and it's not some kind of a fad or a in any way, but it's the constitution of the natural consciousness is pure love for Krishna, and Krishna's all attractive, and they're naturally lovers of Krishna. So there's a complete giving of the self to Krishna with love. That's actually what Krishna consciousness is. A complete giving of the self in the service of Krishna. And that, obviously, is why Krishna consciousness begins with what? Those Shraddha. Because how can you even begin to completely give yourself to someone else unless you have faith Faith what? Because you're placing your whole life is resting in them, and what you have to have faith in, you know, what you have to have faith in before you'd give yourself to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, trust.
Your ability to take care of
you. To protect you, because you're giving up all sense of my life is meant for me. So that Krishna will protect you, and that he's not going to betray you or trick you, or he's not going like this, the keeper of a slaughterhouse. He feeds all the poor animals under his care. And then when they're fat and plump and feeling very secure, he places their hands on the chopping block and he does all kinds of nasty things and separates them from their bodies. The key kills them. So that's one kind of protection. It's limited protection. So no one, the animals have no choice, and they're foolish animals, so they can't get out of their situation. They're animals. They're trapped. But we, as human beings, we have our choice, and we have experience in the material world already, because the material world means the place of exploitation. So, and untrustworthiness. The material world is the land of betrayal. Why is it the land of betrayal? Go ahead.
Because immature kinds of people need themselves.
Yeah, ultimately, when it comes to either me or you, it's always going to be me. There was that book quite a few years ago, looking out for numero uno, number one. If everyone should think that we most ultimately have to look out for yourself, this is the material world. Grow up, kids. This is the material world. You've got to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, no one's going to take care of you. So we're always... So in childhood, if we've had a relatively good childhood, we naturally, because we're little, and our parents are big, and we actually have affection for us, and we naturally have affection for anyone who feeds us, just like the horses and cows and dogs and anyone. So we grew up dependent upon our parents, and we basically have no choice. We place ourselves completely under their protection. And if we have a reasonably good childhood, then we don't fear our mental software is somewhat healthy, and we don't fear placing ourself in the hands of another. But if we don't have that kind of a childhood, or if we're too experienced in the material world, it's a terrifying thing, the most terrifying thing, to place yourself in the hands of another, because everyone is, this is the false ego, and everyone is ultimately selfish. And when again, if it comes to the choice between you and them, they take themselves. So the residents of Vrindavan were the exact opposite of that. They had no false ego, they had no experience of the material world, they only had one experience, and that's love for Krishna. And Krishna, you see in the Bhagavatam, whatever Krishna did, sometimes he would call them out in the middle of the night and then tell them to go home. And they had just left their families, and they took their children down. They were taken with the fever of attraction to Krishna to the highest degree. It was burning so brightly because Krishna had called them with their flutes. And then he played with them as if they were little dolls, and just didn't he like with them, because that's Krishna's position as a transcendental autocrat, the supreme controller over everything. And he did this for, of course, for many reasons. One of them was to show the nature of the gopis' love, that regardless of how or what he did, their love did not quiver or shake in the slightest. It did not neither quiver nor shook, because in the material world, when we don't get our needs met, the tendency is we just pick up whatever affection that we were having and then take it and transplant it somewhere else where we get what we want, because we're the center of everything. And because everyone is like this, we sort of deserve each other. Because, what does that say? What does it say in the Bible, in the materialist Bible? Do unto others before others do unto you. Before they get the chance to do unto you, you do it to them. That's the material world. Grow up, kids. Still want to be here? But the resonance of Vrindavan are not like that. So the first question that the devotees, before they really become devotees, really have to answer is, well, can I trust Krishna? And that's that the trusting of Krishna is called Shraddha. It doesn't come as a gift. It is a gift from the spiritual world and as a gift from Krishna's devotees by Sadhu Sangha. The willingness, or it starts even with the doubt that maybe it's true. The doubt in my own false ego that I have, that there's no transcendental reality. It begins to begin with the doubt that maybe it's true that actually Krishna is actually there and he's a supreme person and he will completely take care. And all I have to do is give myself to him. And we could also say that he's, even if we don't give ourselves to him, he's taking care of everyone in this world, because if he doesn't take care, we can't breathe, we can't eat, we can't eat, we can't digest, and there's nothing to eat, and it says, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitanananam. But everyone in Vrindavan, they have made that decision, if they're nitya, they've made it, they were constitutionally always in that situation, or to sadhana, to their practices. And if they're sadhana siddhas, they've made that decision countless, countless lives ago, that I belong to Krishna. I belong to Krishna. I am Krishna's. And this is our constitutional natural position, as in the words of Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, Jivera Sarupahoya Krishnera Nityada. This is the Sarup, the natural, constitutional, foundational dharma or position of the soul, that he is Krishna's. This is who we are. We are Krishna's eternal servants. And forgetting Krishna, turning our back on Krishna, we try to take care of ourselves and be masters of this world. We end up serving so many people anyway. We end up getting exploited by so many people. We end up trying to be the master. We become the president of a country or a prime minister of a country, and then we have to follow the polls. We have to take a poll of what the people want so that we can give them what they want so that they will vote for us. So we end up having to serve their sensual needs and give them the pleasures they want. Otherwise, we'll be voting right out of office. So we want to be master and end up servant. It's our dharma, it's our constitutional position. We cannot be anything other than servants. And it's the last thing anybody wants to be. What to do? And therefore, there's inherently a conflict in the mind of the conditioned soul. I want to be master and I keep on serving. I want to be master, and I end up doing so many things that I don't want to do. So there's this inherent conflict in the consciousness of a conditioned soul. And the only, ultimately, the only cure is to serve Krishna, give ourselves to Krishna. That's really the beginning of devotional life. Not the, the very beginning, but the beginning of true bhakti. So the residents of Vrindavan, they had given themselves to Krishna so long ago. They had placed themselves in Krishna's hands, but even more than that, at this point, they just had so much love for Krishna that what's going to happen to me never came into their minds, because they were spontaneously, naturally boiling over continuously with love for Krishna. And this is the prerequisite for being in Vrindavan. So when Krishna would blow his flute to announce that he was entering into the forest again, all the creepers, all the birds, all the beasts who were suffering from separation from him, they came back to life, and he told them, "Here I'm coming." So they came up to life, and the trees started blossoming, and the birds started chirp. Or meow. I said that kind of bird. In this world, the birds are all fowls. But in this world, none of them are foul. They're all awakening their Krishna consciousness. So when Krishna would leave the forest, all the animals, all the birds, and not the creepers and the trees, because they couldn't do it, but they would follow Krishna to the edge of the forest. And then Krishna would walk onward. And they were just right there for the beginning of the next day when Krishna would come. And they felt like they had no life left in their body. But in that, because of their spontaneous love for Krishna, all they could think about is Krishna. And that caused them the highest ecstasy. Ecstasy of separation, and that's what the gopis themselves are feeling, because they cannot, there's the churning of the, they have a different kind of churning. They also have a conflicted mind, but it's a spiritually conflicted mind. They want to be with Krishna and they can't be with Krishna. And that, because it's based on love for Krishna, it causes them ecstasy. And because our conditioned soul's conflict is based on selfishness, it causes us misery. So announcing his arrival to console the trees, creatures, birds, and beasts suffering in separation from him, console them, give them life, "I'm coming." The gopis, overwhelmed in waves of ecstasy from hearing that flute sound. So they heard the flute sound and they knew that Krishna was entering the Vrindavan forest. But the animals and birds and creepers were feeling ecstasy because Krishna was entering the forest. So who did they feel was more important, more fortunate? They thought everyone is more fortunate than us, because they're getting the fortune of Krishna. The flute is announcing that they're entering the forest, but that same flute is, for us, is announcing something completely different, that we can't see Krishna. So even the flute, and this is one of the symptoms of a Mahabhagavata, a person on the highest platform of Krishna consciousness, he sees everyone as more fortunate and more devotional than himself. So the gopis, overwhelmed in ecstasy from hearing that flute sound, spoke to their friends in 12 pairs of verses. In case we don't have our mobile phones with us, that's 24 verses. Krishna rested his left cheek on his left shoulder in order to play dhamakas, vibrato, in the ascending and descending modes of the rhythm. So what vibrato means, for the, means the wobbling of the, I only know what it means on the, like on the violin, when a violin player, they move their hands when they're playing like this. Oh, vibrato, we have the musicians here. What is vibrato?
When the note wavers.
The wavering,
up
yeah.
and down between yeah. the actual note.
Yeah.
You can do it vocally as well.
Yeah. Why do you say you can do it vocally? I can't do it vocally.
A little sample, eh?
Yeah, a little, just a little.
What did I have? The bedroom.
You're a frog in your throat. How did you get there? Can you give us a little sample? Oh, you can't do vibrato on demand.
Yes,
this is, it changes the quality of the singing, or changes the quality of the, it enhances the quality of the music. Actually, because you can sing vibrato for us. Don't let that stop you.
Left cheek or my left shoulder.
Don't fall asleep.
I lost a little bit of the left arm last night. I was trying to play the flute. Your cheek and your arm.
All right, come on. Thank you.
All
right. It's very good.
That's our relation.
Yes. So that's that. It's wavering and undulating, something like that. But it's completely under control too. I remember when I was in the eighth grade, the violin teacher in school. She was really expert. We drove her crazy. Can you imagine when the eighth, this poor musician, somehow or another couldn't get it, make enough money as a musician, so she decided to teach the eighth graders in school. Can you imagine what we did to her? Poor Lizzie. She lasted 1 year. Yes, sorry. It's hard to do. Can you do a double reed instrument?
I one time saw this an American flute player, Indian American, and he was playing the flute, and he'd make the with his cheeks.
With the air, yeah.
Yeah, and you watch his whole face kind of thinking the whole sound. He's doing like birds flying kind of sound. Mm. And so I mean, it was all done through the actual mouth, the cheeks.
So this is, it's very difficult to do on a flute. And so that's what Krishna was resting like this. So his and ascending and descending modes of the raga. So raga basically means these male, there's ragas and aginis. Someone once explained it to me and I did. It's hard for me to understand, but there's different, it's basically melodic. There's the different scales, and then the different combinations of the melodies that you can get in the different scales are divided into male and female ragas and raginis. Indeed, and there's so many, there's thousands of them.
There's a rag or ragini for every entity.
They are personifications. Personified, like individuals.
So when they heard this, they went into ecstasy. So at that time, Krishna placed his right shank over his left shank to assume a charming threefold bending form, just like Shyamasundar. Shyamasundar's cheek isn't there because he's taken his flute from his mouth. So that charming form enchanted the three worlds. So the gopis know what Krishna is doing, but they can't see him, but they can see him in their mind's eye because Krishna is actually appearing in their consciousness. The ecstasy of the separation from him. He's actually there. So they're feeling they're not seeing him, but they're seeing him in the feeling that they're not seeing him. Krishna tilted his neck. He rested the flute on his lower lip and made his eyebrows dance to attract the attention of Subal and others to the skillfulness of his song. Because he's playing the flute, so he communicates in different music. Most of our communication is in the words. But Krishna's playing his flute, so he can't communicate with his words. So he's communicating with his eyebrows, telling Subal, look at this. Look what I'm doing here. What type of flute was it? It was equipped with seven holes, which were covered by Krishna's fingers, but not all of them, because there are more holes than fingers, but not all at the same time. Huh? Oh, he has two hands, that's right. It's true, but he wasn't, anyway, did you not play the flute? Huh? You played. Bamboo flute or? Because Krishna never worked, his lotus petal like fingers were soft as the nose of the woman, but they were somewhat harder than his other limbs. So Krishna is describing the softness of Krishna's limbs. His limbs were, fingers were so soft, but not as soft as the other parts of his body. It is said in the next devotion that Krishna's body is so soft that when a leaf falls from a tree onto him, that bodily part will turn medicine color because it is so tender. The wives of the suitors flying in the sky, accompanied by their husbands, became astonished upon hearing the sound of the flute. We have never heard such enchanting flute playing before, which totally bewilders us, even though we have chaste ladies. Your husbands thought, even though we are men, this flute bewilders us too, and make us assume the mentality of women. The celestial women became embarrassed in the presence of their husbands, and thought, our husband, seeing our agitation, will have doubts about us. The husbands, on the other hand, became embarrassed, thinking, having given up our male identity and adopted female identities, our wives will have doubts about us. The celestial ladies and their husbands, the siddhas, then succumbed to the arrows of lust, but not selfish, but come in the spiritual sense. It means the Krishnendriya priti. It means to satisfy Krishna. Seeing the arrows of love for Krishna approaching, quickly the wives said, O arrows of love for Krishna, quickly pierce these hearts that have been offered to you. Let us give up our faithfulness to our husbands and let Krishna enjoy with us. The husband said, as we have given up our manhood and our status as demigods, immediately turn us into gopis and enjoy with us. So they were completely, completely captured by Krishna's food. Both the women and the horses became stunned due to the arrows of Cupid. The same feelings appeared in both parties at once. Therefore, the women's belt became loosened without their knowing, and the men's clothing and hair became loose without their knowing. Thus, the gopis imply, if the demigoddesses and even the demigods reach such unprecedented state of ecstasy just by hearing Krishna's flute, then why are we, who are human beings, and moreover cowherd girls living with Krishna in the same village and have already had intimate association with him, how are we, or why are we standing here without his company? Therefore, my dearest friends, my sakis, even while our husbands and relatives watch and scold us, let us enter the forest of Vrindavan and enjoy with the beloved of our lives. This is the implication at the end of each pair of verses. From that point, why are we standing here? Forget what others are thinking about us. Let us just go and be with Krishna, the beloved of our lives. That's implied at the end of every verse. So this is a very exalted subject matter. And it really can't be understood from the material platform because of our identification with due to false ego with our material bodies and our material minds. Therefore, this appears to be something of the material world to the material consciousness, but it has nothing to do with the material world. It has to do with the soul's relationship with Krishna, and the material world is a reflection based on false ego, based on selfish desires, self-centered desires of what occurs in the spiritual world. So the perfection, or the not exactly sublimation, but the perfection, or the rectification of the reflection, the reality of all the desires that every soul has and is trying to satisfy in the material world exists in his relationship with Krishna, or in her relationship with Krishna. That's where the reality is, and here in the reflected world, based on false ego, all those desires have a perverted nature because they are centered around the false self, and therefore they cannot bring the satisfaction that we're looking for. And then that they place us under the control of the three modes of material nature, under the modes of ignorance and passion and goodness. And in the mode of passion, we have these desires, and we try to satisfy them, but they're really meant for Krishna's satisfaction. But we try to satisfy them, but due to the identification with the body, material body and the material mind is ourself, and due to the false ego, we're calling upon everything to satisfy us. It's like a gigantic tornado. That's what we're like, materialistic tornadoes with its center, and everything is spinning around. This is what we're trying to do, to have everything funneled towards us. And therefore, the result is just the opposite of what we had hoped for, because we're in viparyato smriti, we're in opposite consciousness to what we naturally are. So we have several things going on. We have these very exalted topics, and then I have this huge false ego and this tornado trying to take all these things all in the material world and the conceptions, these exalted conceptions, and pull them towards my pleasure. But that has nothing to do with what's really going on in the spiritual realm or the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yet, Nivritta Tarsai, just as it explained right in the first chapter, Nivritta Tarsai, Upagiya Vanam, Bhavos, Das, Shokta, Brahma, Ka Uttama Sloke, Manavada, Pumam, Vijayta, Vina, Pashubnat. That this, for those who don't have a false ego, Nivritta Tarsai, that have nothing. They possess nothing, kinshana, gochara, they possess nothing in the material world. These topics go in like medicine, not like medicine, rather it goes in like ecstasy. It's just ecstasy, because it reacts not with false ego, but it reacts with the soul, with themselves, and they feel the highest transcendental pleasure. But those who are still caught by false ego material desires, Bhavoshada, it is the medicine. Well, it gives pleasure to the mind and the soul, and it acts as curative medicine to cure the disease, the diseases which afflict the mind, body, and soul. Not, of course, the soul can't be afflicted by a disease, it's forever, it doesn't directly interact with the material world. Doesn't become contaminated at all. Such like oil doesn't, even if it's right on the water, it doesn't touch the water. Or the lotus flower doesn't touch the water. The soul doesn't actually transform and become contaminated by the material world. But due to the false conception of the soul, it experiences the material world as if it was part of the material world, even though it has nothing to do with the material world. And this is the action of Maya. It's the inconceivable potency of the Lord that connects his two other potencies, the material with the soul, the tetragya, with it's incompatible, the other energy, the material energy, which in fact it's incompatible with. It gives him Maya gives the feeling of complete connectedness to the material energy, while in fact it has nothing to do with it. And since we really feel ourselves material, connected to the material energy, and we feel ourselves the body, how do we know that we're not our body? Well, it's easy to know, actually, that you're not your body. Because when you're old, especially when you're older, you're the same person, and you have the same desires, but you don't have the same capacity, because your body has changed in every way, and this is the frustration of age. This is just how Krishna describes it in the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, Dehinasvanyatadehe, Komaram, Jovaram, Jara, Tatadhantara, Praptiya. A wise person, Viras, Pratra, Namuyati, he's not bewildered by all these changes of body. He's not bewildered into thinking that I'm growing old. He's watching his body 30 ages, and he can't do the things he used to be. He knows inside, what am I? Am I this thing, or am I the person inside? Am I my ever-changing mind? My intelligence that sometimes gets more intelligent and sometimes gets a little less intelligent? No, I'm that feeling of I-ness, the identity that I am, which is projected on the body and projected on so many overlays upon it, such as so many overlays upon the eternal soul, so many upadis. No, I'm the person. I'm that feeling, or that individual who feels himself the center of all these things, and is projecting his consciousness incorrectly on a body due to the inconceivable potency of Krishna's Maya Shakti, which is Daivi. It is divinely inspired and empowered by Krishna. Mama Maya. Dhyaya. Very, can't I become it? By, just by thinking, oh, that Bhagavad Gita said that I'm my, I'm an eternal soul, I'm not my body, therefore I'm just going to discharge that time when I first started chanting. I was in Buffalo, New York, and the weather was like, things in Fahrenheit, and it was like minus 20 or something, and I was studying the Bhagavad Gita in the library, school, university library. And I went outside and I decided, since I'm on my body, I wouldn't take my coat. So I was actually able to, like, intellectually separate myself from the body. But I was so sick the next day, that was the problem. I was sneezing like a... It can't be done by an intellectual adjustment. It can be done. Mam eva ye padyante mayam etan tante by giving ourselves to Krishna, surrendering. And so there's different levels of this giving oneself to Krishna. Of those from the beginning, is it takes that test. Yes, I'm going to give myself to Krishna. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to place myself in his hands. And this is the beginning of the process. And then gopis also performing the same process, but on the highest level, with the highest degree of all-encompassing love. So the surrender, in essence, what does it mean? In essence, it means that Krishna is my guardian. I am his. And that gives one, and if one does that fully, truly, actually, then that gives one consciousness that I belong to Krishna. And he is mine. That naturally gives birth to that other aspect of the consciousness of a surrendered soul, that I belong to Krishna. I am included. Now I'm always excluded. That gives us a feeling of inclusion. It gives us, because something's always wrong. There's something, internal conflict is always going on because, well, I'm excluded. What am I excluded from? It's my relationship with Krishna. And it rests in our, this is our free will. Because Krishna won't, and we can even say cannot, force us to, because that precludes love. I will force you to love me. I will force you. I force someone to depend on you externally, but not the giving of the heart is not something that can be forced.
In Indian films, they do that. Does
that work? Only in Indian films it works, maybe. What do you mean? How did they say, I force you to love me? By my love, I will force you to love me. No.
I'm not sure about that. But
what do they, how do they do it? What's the system they use to force someone to love them? Clever as those Indians are. I don't know if we could do this one. Just less as long as the film. Such a heavy topic. And yet, the gopis are the most surrendered, they're thinking themselves the most unfortunate. So, but that their humility is not, it is the same as their prema, it is the same as their love. very mysterious. But here's why we're so humble. They're thinking everyone is so fortunate. But we are alone or unfortunate because we can't be with Krishna. And they even think the reason that we can't be with Krishna is because we are so insincere in our love. Otherwise, Krishna is known that he always stays, he goes to those who love him. He's captured by love. And since he's far away from us, this means that our love is not real. This is their humility, this is the inconceivable behavior of the residents of Vrindavan. Humility and prema are the same. And therefore, in the material world, there is no prema and there is no humility, even though in the material world, even though people appear to be humble, and well, if they do appear to be humble, but you scratch the surface, there's always pride there, deep pride, arrogance. There must be an Urdu saying to this effect here. Please. That in the material world, everyone is ultimately proud. Proud of nothing. That's the problem. Yeah, what is it that we're proud of? I can't remember what it is.
Handsome.
Huh?
Long, wealthy.
Huh?
Good family.
Yes, you can see, yeah. But
it has been said in Urdu.
I thought so.
Yes. Sharar mein roshni, shole mein noor kiska hai. Jimawe khalq puraz kibr hai, mein hairan hu. Ye mushte khaap pe itna zarur kiska hai. See, this kid,
you can understand?
In the fire, the glow, who is glowing in the fire, you know? Sharar mein roshni. And in the spark, the glow is of what power, you know? Sharar mein roshni, shole mein noor kiska hai. And the man is full of ego. And he says, I wonder, okay, whose ego is this, you know, in the man, you know?
Who's wondering?
The poet.
Oh, the poet. Who's ego is it? The man isn't wondering.
No, he is wondering. Everybody is proud. Where from this pride has come? You know, where from the spark has got its glow? Where from...
Oh, I get it.
Yeah,
so they're blaming Krishna.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, everything is coming from there. But he says, I'm surprised.
It sounds like me. It's all his fault. So I think too.
That part that he's pointing out that, you know, I'm surprised that whose ego is this, you know? Yeah. Who has given or created the ego? People at different stages of their realization express these things.
Who is it? In English they also have a saying, but it's of a little different mood. I mentioned it before, even a pauper is proud of his penny. That's a good one. I don't know where it comes from though. Even a pauper is proud of his penny. This is a symptom of Kali Yuga.
Pride comes before us all.
Yeah.
That's I remember one time being on an Indian train, and there was this beggar who was sitting in the, you know, where the trunk get on and off. And he was very, very meticulous in rolling up his pant leg, you know, his dirty old ripped pants, and he was rolling and rolling until he got them around about his knee. And then he very meticulously started unwinding a piece of ripped cloth that he had tied around his leg like a bandage. And when he got it off, there was a handful of sticks, and he started counting them very meticulously. And then he very carefully put them back, and he wrapped them up with this rag again, rolled down his pants.
Had sticks on his pants?
He had sticks all tied together like in a bun. He was a little creepy, didn't he?
Yeah. Perhaps.
He had his leg, but by a rag, and he counted them all and put them all back.
And it was his bed, like 180.
No. It was all he had, it was his possession, and he was just checking it all, putting it back. Like, wow.
Everyone needs to hold something in
this.
Yeah, this big thing.
The colors on them.
Yes.
All of that.
Yeah, on a bigger scale, that's all.
I'm glad you were talking about that instead of just going to go into computer jokes.
Yeah.
Plastics and colors. And yeah, because the soul needs something to be attached to. It just must hold on to something. Even though it's obviously foolish that there's no security in any of these things. There's such a need. So Prabhupada's message so much was, hold on to Krishna. Don't let go. No matter what.
I was translating it properly. The last line says, Dimagi khalk pura kibra hai. The brain, say, of the whole humanity is so proud, you know, they are so proud. And he says, I wonder, in this mushti khat mein itna gurur kiska hai. He said, man, he is just, you know, mushti khat mein, this is musht. Khat means earth. He is just a small handful of ashes, man, you know. And say from he has inherited all this. That's the beginning.
Sounds like a criticism of the man rather than a criticism of
the man. In general, he's saying everybody is so full of pride.
What to do?
I read one time that the Shri Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur says, we have equal to the chastity. That's of course the tension. Equal.
To the chastity of Krishna?
No, to their chastity in general. In other words, to their
oh, yeah.
So their love for yeah. Incredible food. And only a certain
yeah, right.
They'd be released from the
yeah, so Krishna has it. So Krishna had to flood the river so it would overflow its banks with his food plane. Because and that's another thing that's hard for the Westerners to comprehend. Also, so fantastic with the wives and the others in the middle of what's the big deal? They ran out in the middle of the night. So, what's the big surrender in that? I mean, this is Lord. I mean, you know.
It was all song.
But yeah, so one has to appreciate the chastity, the depths of the culture, to understand what it actually took for them to. And also, and the culture was so strong, is that if it did something, it was not going back, even. You're out.
If for one night, it was not clear where a girl was, for one night, no one would marry her. So
this is what it takes.
And they threw it all behind them. That
happened when Ramchandra, a time when he was incognito, just, you know, going around in his kingdom and seeing, hearing what everybody is saying. And the washerman Bobby, his wife had gone to his parents for one night. And he turned her out. He said, you know, I don't know where you went, you know, for one night. I'm not like Ramchandra, you know, who will kill his wife, even though she was in captivity of Ravana for so many months. And Ram heard this. Then he decided that he banished Sita. Because people are sort of, you know, taking him as an example. and this will corrupt the society. That part of the standard in the world.
And even and also in the Mahabharata, with Bhishma and Ambika, yeah, that was the cause of Bhishma's death. Because she said, "I love who was it that she loved?" The Salya. So then he sent her back, and the human being because she'd been with, so she no one would take her. And after being kidnapped by Bhishma, she said, "Well, then you have to marry me." And he said, "Sorry, I've made Brihadrata. No, I can't do it." So all this tension.
Amazing culture.
And this is at the heart.
We're so busy trying to get rid of tension because the world is so tense. So when you it's interesting because when you use the word, like subconsciously, it's almost like going, "Oh, tension, even more tension." And then it's very important to understand different results that come from those two types of tension. You can perceive it a little bit in the Krishna Yoga, it's different than hearing the news or something jarring and unpleasant.
This one is forever new, this news, and that is because it did old. Okay. Did you look at